What the world needs now is positivity. Connecting, relating, and being human together is where it's at. Hi there, Honey German, and I know life happens, but trust, you got this. And State Farm got us. It feels good knowing that State Farm agents are there to help you choose the right coverage with great support 24/7. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hay dos cosas que son absolutamente ciertas. Abuelita te ama y nunca diría que no a McDonald's. Date un gusto con un Grandma McFlurry en tu orden hoy. Es lo que abuela quisiera. Barapapapa. En McDonald's participantes por tiempo limitado.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
Locatora Radio is a radiophonic novela,
which is just a very extra way of saying
a podcast.
I'm Dios FM.
And I am Mala Muñoz.
Locatora Radio is your prima's favorite podcast, hosted by us, Mala and Diosa.
We're two IG friends turned podcast partners, breaking down pop culture, feminism, sexual wellness, and offering fresh takes on trending topics through nuanced interviews with up-and-coming Latinx creatives.
Known as Las Locatoras, Las Mamis of Myth and Bullshit, and Las Podcasteras Peligrosas, we were podcasting independently since 2016, but joined iHeartMedia's My Cultura Network in 2022.
This year, we're continuing to share stories from the Latinx community para todo el mundo.
Welcome to Season 8.
Are you listening?
Hola, hola, locamores. Welcome to Season 8 of Locatora Radio. I'm Diosa.
And I am Mala.
You're tuning in to capítulo 192, 192.
Last time on Locatora Radio, we interviewed the one and only Curly and Maya of the Super Secret Bestie Club. Go back, listen to that episode, subscribe to Locatora Radio, leave a review, and share with a friend.
Amazing. So we have a lot in store today. This is our last episode of the season. So we're just going to start off by just checking in. Mala, how are you? You've been busy, per usual.
Yes, I'm good. I've been busy. This past weekend, I was at SF Sketchfest, which was so fun. I performed on two shows. It was my first comedy festival. So I was just really thrilled to like have gotten in. I performed a set at the Brava Theater in the Brava Cabaret, which is like their small room. And then I performed at the Lost Church, which was a really, really fun, cool venue. So I had a great time, great first comedy festival experience. It is also week 3 of grad school, so just like getting my feet wet, getting my bearings, getting to know my classmates, really like scoping out the competition, you know what I mean? Like really seeing who's stacking up and who's not, you know? I'm going to be that mean girl in class. I'm kidding. I'm being nice, I promise. What else? Okay, so I'm back in my acting bag, which I'm so excited about. So like last year, before the holidays, I went to a show called Single Writers Only at Genghis Cohen. Maya Murillo, again, of Super Secret Besties Club. She was their special guest. She acted in a bunch of sketches. She killed it. It was so fun. Helen Fernandez, who's like the showrunner of the show, the director, she asked me to be the special guest for their January Single Writers Only. So at the time, like by the time this episode comes out, that show will be done. But as of the recording of this episode, I am in 7 sketches. I am not off book. I have 3 days to get memorized, to get off book. But I'm honestly so excited. The cast is really sick. Like everyone in the sketches, they're very talented. And I just feel like, you know, I've been kind of keeping my improv, like acting sort of bone. That's not the phrase, but that I was going to say I've been keeping the bone hot, but that's not but the skills, you know, I've been keeping them warm. I've been staying warm. Like I've been at Groundlings and I've been doing the stand up and like UCB and stuff like that. So I feel like, OK, it's a good thing I was doing that stuff during the pandemic because now like it's time.
Yeah.
Now it's tight showtime.
I love that.
So, yeah. So, like, I'm feeling happy. I'm feeling good. How about you? You were just in a big race.
I was. I just ran my first race of the year, Rose Bowl Half Marathon, and it was hard. I ran it last year, and I PR'd, and so I had, like, really big goals for this race, and unfortunately, I didn't hit my PR time, but I was only, like, 30 seconds off from last year's time, so it wasn't too big of a decrease or whatever. But yeah, you know, it's I'm not gonna lie, like it is disappointing when you go out and you have these goals and you don't hit them, but then you really have to remind yourself, like, well, I just ran 13 miles, so like what is wrong with me? Like, let me celebrate myself and be proud that I finished the damn thing. And there were 15,000 runners. It felt so big compared to last year. I mean, last year was big, but I don't know the difference of runners, but it felt a lot bigger this year. And but it was fun, and it's like my next stop is the LA Marathon.
Oh my god, I can't believe it.
Yeah,
wild.
So
it's coming.
We'll be off season when the race happens, but I'll definitely be posting about it on my Instagram and the Locatora Instagram. And It's a big deal. You know, it's the LA Marathon. It's like, it's definitely more like friendly than the other races. Like, you don't have to qualify. You know, it's not like Boston.
Right.
It's not like, what's the one in Germany? Berlin. Mm. Like, the Berlin Marathon. Like, there are certain marathons you have to qualify for.
With a qualifying time.
And LA, like, you can get a qualifying time at the LA Marathon to run, like, Boston. But you also don't need to qualify to run it. So I think in that way, it's kind of mixed. Like, you have the athletes, the, like, super elite runners, and then you have, like, the hobbyist, like me, you know, and so I'm excited.
Yeah.
But I'm scared.
You're going to be great. You're going to win. You're going to win the marathon.
There we go.
I know it. I feel like the LA Marathon is kind of like, it's a big deal in LA.
Yeah.
Like the whole city is sort of activated.
Yes.
And it's on TV. And if you have lived in LA for a while or you grew up around here, you've probably seen all the students run LA.
Yes.
In their shirts, all the little kids running all over the city, because kids, students will go, the schools will like train them all year, and then they go and they run the marathon.
Yep. That was actually Fernando. He did students run LA.
That's so cute.
When he was in middle school.
With his short little legs.
He's already run. Hey.
How did he finish?
He's already run the marathon.
That's exciting. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was pretty athletic. He still plays soccer, but he used to be like, you know, he qualified for like a soccer scholarship. Like he was an athlete. But you know, he went a different route, which good for me, you know, but
public service.
Yeah, public service. We got the pension.
You could have been an athlete's wife.
We probably wouldn't have met.
Oh,
I wouldn't date an athlete for real.
Really? Why not?
I mean, a professional athlete.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. But it seems a little dicey. They have a hard time.
It's a hit or miss.
Yeah. I used to watch, what was that show? The Game.
Yes.
About football wives.
Mm-hmm.
The Sunbeams. God, I used to love that show. yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It's a totally different lifestyle.
Totally. Yeah. But anyway, so that's what I've been doing. That's what I will be doing during off season, training and working.
Yeah.
And all things. But yeah, I mean, today is our last episode of the season. We made it to 30. We made it to our second network season.
Can't believe it.
I'm so proud of us.
It's going by so fast.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah, it is wild. It's really flown by. And I think partly because we haven't done like pre-network, we were doing calendar seasons, right? And so, like, we had the full year dedicated, but they were kind of, like, bleeding into each other. So it does feel like it's going a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we launched in July with our visual trailer inspired by Raquel Welch and Cher.
Yes.
We took I'm a woman, so I'm a podcaster.
PODCAST.
Exactly.
Are you listening? We sang, y'all.
We did.
We laid down vocals.
We did.
In the stew.
I know.
Shout out Crystal. She helped us through it. She walked
did.
Us through it.
She was voice coaching us.
She gave us the Billie Eilish treatment.
She did.
She was our Phineas behind the scenes, just isolating those vocals, just like the best notes. And that's why it sounds so good.
Yeah, it's true.
Hay dos cosas que son absolutamente ciertas. Abuelita te ama y nunca diría que no a McDonald's. Date un gusto con un Grandma McFlurry en tu orden hoy. Es lo que abuela quisiera. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. En McDonald's, participantes por tiempo limitado.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling. And it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together, and that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi. I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate, because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me? Sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura Podcast Network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
How do you feel now that season 8 is coming to an end? It's wrapping.
Man, I feel accomplished. I feel relieved. I feel happy. I'm always happy when it's like another fantastic season for the books, you know, for the archives. Just another chapter completed. I mean, what a satisfying feeling, you know?
Yeah.
And we're already thinking about next season.
Oh, yeah. We're already planning. We're like off season, but we're not really off season because we'll be working, developing. We have a lot in store for next season. We've been brainstorming new segments and new everything. Lots of new things coming next season.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, at our core we'll be the same, but we have some new ideas.
Yeah.
New like freshness.
Fresh. Yeah.
Coming.
Fresh so vibes.
We're excited. And season 9 will launch at the end of April.
Yeah.
So if you need to catch up, you can head back to our feed to tune in, share with your prima, share with a friend. And, you know, since you won't be hearing from us for a couple of months, I think we wanted to start with some local, global happenings and just give our perspective on it.
There's a lot going on. First and foremost, you all are probably keeping up. Oscar season is upon us. It's here. And another big deal in L.A. I mean, I'm sure in other parts of the country, too. But here it's like it's awards season.
Yes.
You know, so there are some really fun, exciting nominations that have come out. Namely, America Ferrera has been nominated for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for Barbie.
Yes.
Which is amazing because Greta Gerwig was snubbed and didn't get an Oscar nomination for Barbie. Neither did Margot Robbie.
Right.
But our girl America did. So we're happy over here.
Yes.
No complaints.
I mean, I think I saw someone post like, okay, yes, they didn't get nominated, but the outrage is also overshadowing that America did.
Yeah.
So like, let's talk about America,
the
right?
The movie technically got a nomination.
Right.
Vis-a-vis America.
Yes.
And she deserves it. Go listen to our America episode.
Yes, we have a full episode, a retrospective of her career and some of our favorite films and TV series that she's been in. So definitely tune into that one. It's one of our favorites. It's called We Love America.
Hell yeah. And I just want to say, you know that she's one hell of an actress when, like, the supporting actress is getting the shine, is the standout, is getting
That's
the
true.
Nom. You know, like, she wasn't the lead.
Right.
But so much of the buzz has been around her performance specifically, the monologue specifically, what she means in the movie. And you know, and so I think it's a very powerful moment because Margot Robbie is like, I mean, there's so much star power there.
Right.
Not that America doesn't have her own star power. Clearly, we're seeing it. It's shining through. It's happening. So, yeah, very exciting. Very exciting times. And she's not the only one. Becky G.
That's right.
Also nominated for an Oscar.
Becky G was nominated for Best Original Song for the Flamin' Hot film. And that's exciting.
Very exciting. Eva Longoria has been talking about working with Becky to bring the song together and bring it into the movie. A lot of support behind her and the music. Very exciting to see.
Yeah. Also, Colman Domingo was also nominated for
Rustin.
Yes. And so another Latino actor.
Yeah.
Also, you know, getting their shine in the mix. Yes. And there's a few others, but we definitely wanted to highlight America since we covered her this past season.
100%. So we continue to keep up with the Oscars. I don't know. Do you guys watch the Oscars at home? I watch the Oscars.
We still do.
I tune in when it's on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it.
We still do. Yeah, I think that now it's taken a lot more work on my end to like keep up with the films that are nominated. I feel like before I used to just, oh yeah, I've seen all of them. And now I'm like, okay, I have to watch all of them. Like there's a little more preparation on my end. I don't know if it's because I'm older.
I don't know. I don't have the numbers, the hard data to make this comparison. But my feeling is that there are just more movies.
Mm-hmm.
There are just way more movies. I feel like back in the day, there was like the big five studios.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have like your Paramount, your Warner Brothers, your Disney, et cetera, Sony, what have you. And they were the ones making movies, and the movies were showing at the movie theater. So you knew which movies were contenders because there was only so many.
Right.
There was two handfuls maybe of Oscar contenders per year. And now it's not just the big five studios. There's tons of studios.
Yes.
You know.
Agreed.
And yeah, Netflix is a competitor. Hulu's a competitor. Apple TV. Well, because apparently now I want to say it's this cycle. But I think Apple TV got the most Oscar noms of all the studios.
Okay.
And I think Paramount was somewhere at the bottom.
Oh, interesting.
So the streamers are cleaning up.
Yeah.
You know. So anyways, yes, it's just it's a different landscape than when we were tiny children.
I know. Oh, my God.
Using dial-up internet. It's fine. It's okay.
We're still here.
But you know who's not still here?
Oh,
the tons of employees that were laid off
set it up
the
that
LA
way.
Times. They're still with us. They're still here. We love them. We embrace them. We support them. But yeah, the LA Times.
I'm
so sorry.
Start over.
The LA Times has just laid off a bunch of journalists and copy editors and audience engagement editors and opinion columnists, all kinds of people. It's very bad over there. 115 positions. It's not only the LA Times. It's also Univision, Sports Illustrated, the folks over at Condé Nast.
Pitchfork was folded into GQ. There's have been a ton of layoffs. We're only 1 month into the year. And it's definitely heartbreaking, gut-wrenching. You know, we've been talking about the loss here at Locatora this past year because we both started. Mala was doing some videos for them. I did some articles for them. And to me, it was like, you know, my first byline in the LA Times was with The Los, was for The Los. And so I probably wouldn't have pitched to them, to the LA Times, mm-hmm. had it not been for The Los. And so I'm really grateful to the team there that had, they gave me that opportunity. And to be clear, The Los is still a project. I think there's only four employees, but their team was essentially gutted.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were let go. Mainly, Latino journalist.
Yeah.
In the Delos team, at least.
Specifically, mm-hmm. for sure. And journalists that have been doing really cool stuff that we know and love.
Yeah.
And you know what? They're going to be okay. They're going to thrive. They're going to go on and do great things. However, it is so unnerving and unsettling to see all the things happening at the LA Times it is the paper of record for us here on the West Coast. You know, this is our New York Times. It's the LA Times. And I have a little bit of ethical chisme that I want to drop.
Yes.
So I have a friend who will go unnamed, who works at the Times, and shared like a really interesting little tidbit, a little perspective with me, that this person feels like upon the change of power and ownership and leadership, there's been this very chaotic decline in sort of organization and morale and like the treatment of staff over at the Times. And there's this sort of growing feeling that like is ownership like trying to tank the paper from the inside, you know, and you have folks who not only are being laid off, but who are leaving.
Right.
Because they're like, we can't operate a newsroom this way. This is chaos. So folks are leaving because it's too chaotic and people are being laid off, creating even more chaos.
Right.
So like, what is the future of the Times? How do they recover from this? I wonder, too, when does the city or the state, do they step in?
Right.
Is there like a life raft that they send over? Like, what happens? How does the paper get salvaged? Like, where does it go? We're just going to have to keep watching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's especially alarming because it's an election year and disinformation, misinformation is, we're at like a breaking point. Compiled with it being an election year, I believe the Washington, D.C. bureau was also closed. So that definitely raises a lot of red flags for me.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you're a lot of the journalists that were let go were journalists of color. And so they're also a lot of the times the ones that are in the community reporting on their own community.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you lose that, especially during election year, especially during a year when information is crucial, it's very alarming. The red flags are raised, you know.
Hay dos cosas que son absolutamente ciertas. Abuelita te ama y nunca diría que no a McDonald's. Date un gusto con un Grandma McFlurry en tu orden hoy. Es lo que abuela quisiera. Barapapapa. En McDonald's participantes por tiempo limitado.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important. Like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama. And when reflecting on what matters most, I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
Yeah, I mean, when we've talked about this in the past, but like LA Mag is a publication that had a change in ownership and leadership and sort of went from being kind of a little more like indie LA to being like, oh, owned by like OC, like right wingers.
Yeah.
We've seen some weird like misinformation printed in LA Mag.
Yes.
Which is like, why was this story specifically put in here and put out? For example, there was like a little article from LA Mag that said Nuri Martinez has moved to Arizona and is now a Republican.
Yes.
Now, I feel like that's a plausible thing that could happen. I said that.
You said that.
On a past episode of Loca Tora Radio. And then months, a year later, maybe, LA Mag puts out this little article saying, oh, like, Nuri Martinez has moved to Arizona and is a Republican. Mm-hmm. But then Nuri Martinez put out a statement.
No, I believe it was a journalist from the LA Times that was like,
followed up on that.
Followed up and reached out to Nuri.
There you go.
And Nuri responded to the journalist and said, no, I'm still very much in the
California,
Valley. I'm still very much a Democrat. Like, that's not true at all.
Yeah. And so, like, why did LA Mag print that?
Yeah.
What was the... What was the reason? Where did it come from? And what was the reason? When I said it, it's just like a prediction.
Right.
You know, they put it out as like a piece of reporting.
Yes.
So anyways, odd, our LA news outlets are suffering.
Yeah. I mean, and LA obviously, you know, is a large state, makes up like the fifth largest economy in the country. And
California.
Yeah. And so we need, California. And so, yes, we need a working, functioning
media
newsroom, mm-hmm. paper mm-hmm. that's going to cover everything on this side, on the West Coast, in LA, in California. Like, it's crucial.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think something that I've been seeing journalists talk about is like your gut reaction maybe to cancel your LA Times subscription, but actually keep it. We want to keep supporting local paper. We want to keep supporting grassroots papers, community journalism, whether that be LA Taco, LA Public Press, or any like hyper local news organizations. We want to keep supporting the paper of record. We want to support journalists and journalism. It's super important mm-hmm. now and forever.
Yeah. And I mean, throughout the LA area, like, in every little community, there's a local paper, mm-hmm. like the Pasadena Star News. Mm-hmm. There's like also like a print paper that is downtown. It's like a downtown weekly or whatever that I see like at all the coffee shops and stuff. So there's different ways to get your news. Also, if you have a favorite journalist at the LA Times who has since been laid off, most of them will have some type of a Substack or a blog or somewhere else where you can follow and subscribe and still read their work. So check that out, because I think we're going to probably see, during the pandemic, a lot of journalists started Substacks.
Yeah.
I anticipate we'll see another wave of that, mm-hmm. you know, so that's another way to support.
Yeah. And I think something my journalist friends and I have been talking about, I mean, is really kind of modeling what you and I have done, Mala. But one of my friends was saying, like, you know, she has like a 9-to-5 that pays really well. And she's like, I just have to do journalism on the side. Like, I can't leave this stable job.
Totally.
Because look at the landscape right now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were talking about like, well, that's really what worked for us. We had our 9-to-5s and we kept it for as long as possible. And so I hate for that to be the reality for journalists and up and coming journalists. But I think that because of the landscape, I think we're going to see a lot of like more freelancing, which comes with its pros and cons, right? You have less like formalized, you're not in a union, you have less protections.
Yeah.
It's, you know, journalists are hunting down like getting paid for like their freelance work notoriously. And so there's pros and cons to all of it. But yeah, I think like, what is the, you know, the broader, bigger question that we're not going to answer today because nobody can, but it's like, what is the future of journalism and how do we fund it? How do we do it ourselves? Does it become a co-op? You know, is it worker owned? I don't know. But I think that these are all questions that we're all asking right now.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I feel like this is one of those fallouts of late stage capitalism.
Oh, yeah.
All of our media is privately owned.
Yes.
And, you know, not to say that a government run media would be so much better, but we don't have state media. We don't have government media.
Yeah. Public media. I mean, there is public media.
Yeah.
But there's also private media, as you're saying.
The LA Times is privately mm-hmm. owned, you know, and by like one person.
Yeah.
And that's problematic.
Yeah, by a billionaire.
Clearly, yeah. Very problematic. So, yeah, I don't know what the solution is.
Right.
But the system that we have created is not stable. And I don't know, every apocalyptic film I've ever seen, you know, when news media is run into the ground and is in flames, that's never a good thing.
No.
That's a bad sign.
I mean, democracy is already hanging on by a thread.
Yes.
You know, we're about to see former President Trump, you know, probably be on the ballot for the second time. We're going to see Biden versus Trump 2.0. Like, that's the likelihood of it. And so to see then democracy and journalism hanging on by a thread is scary. We are in late stage late stage capitalism.
Yeah.
It's apocalyptic.
Yeah.
It's not like future apocalypse. It's like, no, it's apocalyptic now.
It's unfolding. It's current. Yes. We're in the middle of it. I always I try and remind myself, you know, so as not as to fearmonger.
Right.
You know, not to be like, oh my God, doom and gloom. But it's like, I just feel like in the history of the world, there have been so many horrible things that have happened that at the time probably felt like apocalypse.
Right. Oh, totally.
Like,
yes.
We literally dropped nuclear bombs, you know, yes. on Japan. And I'm sure that had to have felt like end of days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the world continues. Life yeah. goes on. So I try and keep that in mind.
Yes.
Like, bad things happen and somehow we still...
persevere.
We persevere.
The resilience of the human spirit, honestly.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not to be cheesy, but that's the reality.
That's what we're dealing with here. It's all about the friends that we made along the way. Ultimately, as long as we're making friends and having fun,
well,
that's what it's all about.
I also want to shout out, you know, one of the journalists, the only Latina opinion columnist at the LA Times that was unfortunately laid off, Jean Guerrero.
Yes.
She helped us unpack the polarizing comments and polarizing stances we were seeing on social media when the Israel-Palestine crisis first unfolded post October 7th. We know, obviously, it's been decades long, but she did help us unpack some of that. And so because our season is coming to the end and we won't be able to do any more coverage from now until April, we did want to share that, you know, at the time of this recording, it's still very much and will always be Free Palestine. And PBS reported that as of now, the Palestinian death toll has reached 25,000. There are a couple journalists that have evacuated Gaza, you know, have been there for 100 plus days and now feel they can no longer safely report and have decided to evacuate. Which means that, one, there's less eyes on the ground, and two, the likelihood of them being able to then return to Gaza is very unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And so just wanted to state that and remind y'all that if you haven't listened to our previous episodes about the Palestinian crisis and our coverage on it, we have three episodes, one with Jean Guerrero, the other about Latin American and Palestinian solidarity, and Lauren Medina talks to us about, as a Palestinian Colombian woman, about solidarity and how to be active and how to join local actions and calling your reps and all of that.
100%. So on today's episode, the carne of today's episode, we are bringing back a very original OG topic that we discussed on Locatora many, many eons ago. That is the concept that we actually coined alongside a past Locatora radio guest. And the term is ethical chisme. So you've probably heard us talk about ethical chisme on the podcast. There's a whole episode around it. And we recorded said episode in 2017.
I can't believe we've been podcasting that long. I know we've done it and we've done it and we talk about how we've been doing it for so long, but seeing it in that way, it was literally episode 10, y'all. Like,
wild.
And we celebrated a mini milestone on that episode because it was episode 10 and we invited Ruben, who's formerly known as Queer Chicano Chisme, onto Locatora Radio to discuss chisme. And while we were recording, the three of us coined this term, ethical mm-hmm. chisme, and made the distinctions between being a metiche, being, you know, a chismosa, chismoso, chismose.
Sure.
And then being like an ethical chismosa, chismoso.
Yeah.
What have you.
And this episode, if you go back and listen to the episode, we talk about this, but we recorded this episode three times. Because the first two times, it just didn't record.
We were baby producers.
Yeah.
We weren't even calling ourselves producers then.
No, it's just like we have a podcast.
Yeah.
We're making a podcast. Mm-hmm. Ruben was very frustrated with us, to say the least, but we got it done. And that third episode was the best episode because we had this opportunity over three recordings to develop this concept and this idea, which we now have been calling ethical chisme. So we were like making a distinction between a chismosa and a metiche.
Right.
Right. Like a chismosa is a little bit innocuous, kind of harmless. It's a person, usually a woman, a femme, who is gossiping, or as we like to call it, just sharing information.
Yes.
Just sharing information and spreading knowledge. And then a metiche is something else. It's somebody who is like sticking their nose where it doesn't belong, is overhearing somebody else's conversation. We likened the federal government to being a metiche, like tapping phones and listening to our conversations and reading our mail and all kinds of things, right? So like metiche kind of being about surveillance.
Yes.
So then we said there's this third thing, which is an ethical chisme. And we gave examples of like what that could look like.
Yeah, one example we gave was like safety planning. You know, if you know someone in your community is maybe a predator or engaging in violent behavior, you share that information with the people around you, right? And that's an example of ethical chisme. You're not like gossiping per se, but it's a knowledge share. It's keeping each other safe. It's keeping your community safe. And we talked about the different ways women, femmes, queer folks have used chisme, ethical chisme, as a praxis.
Absolutely. And I think since then, like now when I think of this concept, and I've been kind of reflecting on this, and I think actually when I engage in something that might be considered ethical chisme, I feel like more often than not, it's about like good things.
Yes.
Like, oh, hey, like here's a resource.
Yes.
Here's a program. Here's an opportunity. Here's a person to connect with. Here's something to try. Like it's, I think on TikTok, what people will, I'm not gatekeeping, no gatekeeping. Here's how I do it, right? I think another way to look at that would be like, this is a type of ethical chisme.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm giving you the low, I'm giving you the skinny, I'm giving you the 411. It can also be kind of a resource share.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think at the time, you know, 2017, you know, we're on the very beginning of the Me Too movement. We were talking about survivor-centered things. So we were, I think at that time, framing it as this safety planning, right? Now, 7 years later, you know, we can see like, oh, it's also resource sharing. It's also apply for this grant. Look at this job.
Mm-hmm.
These people treat their workers really well.
Yeah.
Work here.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's that and
yes.
This, you know.
The idea has evolved for us. And it ties in, too, because I think one of the best ways for women to be safe is to have resources.
Yes.
And so sometimes safety, it's not so much always getting away from a bad thing. It's often building our foundations and assuring that we have our needs taken care of so that we're not susceptible in different ways.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think like it's just a different approach to the same idea.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think we, in a way, stepped back from talking about chisme because there were, at the time in the digital landscape in 2017, not that many people were doing it. Now there's like a ton of articles about, you know, I saw one in Glamour. Chisme isn't just salon chair gossip. It's an act of solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
Refinery 29, chisme is, you know, has a purpose, has a meaning, right? And there have been scholars and writers that have written about chisme. So I think whenever we start to see that something that we talk about gain like a lot of traction, we like to move on to something new because other people are doing it too.
Totally.
But given that this is a podcast and we share lots of knowledge and resources and everything, like we're going to bring back ethical chisme to wrap up season 8.
Yeah. It's also a reminder. We have the timestamp, honey, 2017. Go back, do your research. We were the first ones. The term did not exist on the internet before our episode.
Right. At least not as ethical chisme. And what I go, you know, when I'm prepping for this episode, there was a scholar that was interviewed,
mm-hmm.
and she used ethical chisme as a way to talk about her grad school experience.
Mm.
And in her interview, I was reading the transcript, at least. She says, oh, I first heard this on Locatora Radio.
Boom.
Back in 2017. And it was, they used ethical chisme. That was the first time I heard it. And that's not the first time we've been cited in scholarly works, which is obviously, it's like so exciting for me.
It's
like,
happened a lot.
I nerd out on that.
It's happened many times on actually at this. We're in a number of thesis papers.
Yeah. But I think it's exciting, you know, and we like, you know, also want to give us our own flowers, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh, yeah, we've been talking about this for a long time. And we have more examples that we're going to share today.
Yeah, these are just facts. The other term that we coined, literally episode number one, is loca epistemologies.
Yes.
Which has also been written about in an academic paper, which...
in a dissertation.
In a dissertation, no less, that is on its way to maybe one day becoming a book. So this is also why we talk about this, because we're inventing terminology, you yes. know? And once it's published, we have the copyright, as a reminder. Once it's out there, there's a timestamp, there's a copyright. Happy to share.
Cite your sources.
But just know.
There's anything forget. You've learned at Locatora Radio, it's to always cite your sources.
Yeah.
And give people their due.
Yeah. And we are owed. We are owed.
Well, I think like one, you know, I don't want to get too into the weeds about like my own family history or chisme, but I think when thinking about oral histories and our family's oral histories, you know, that can also be considered chisme. Like I heard a story from my mom the other day about one of her cousins that did something really awful to his father, right?
No.
Yeah. And so again, I'm not getting into the weeds about my family history and drama, right? But it did remind me of this like, oh, like this is an example of oral history, of family history, and it's not like the positive kind, you know? It's not sure. like, oh, you know, we immigrated here and so-and-so helped us and they gave us a room to stay while we like got on our feet. It's like, oh no, this person did something really bad to their father. And then they were kind of ostracized from the family because like, why would you do that to your father?
Right. Oh my God. Now I'm like, what is that?
I'll tell you off the record.
Okay.
But I think like that is another way that we can think about ethical chisme and oral history is like, sometimes there are bad people in our families. And sometimes they're not actually removed when they should be removed. But entre nos, we know like this person is not someone you want to be around. Mm. And so I can make the choice to not be around them. This kind of ties into like Latinx estrangement, what she was saying.
Yeah.
Like we can choose who we want to be around and who we don't want to be around. And I think that is another way that we keep each other safe, even within our families, is by sharing like, oh, so-and-so is an unsafe person. Mm-hmm. Or so-and-so stole money from this person.
So don't lend them money.
You know what
FYI.
I mean?
Just FYI. You will not see it back.
Right. And so it's like even in our little, ecosystems of family, like keeping each other safe from the family sometimes. And the only way to like really know is through that oral history.
Right.
Because it's not going to be written down. It's the chisme. It's the family chisme.
Right. I mean, there have been also, okay, so a few years ago, this article came out, and I want to say it was in the LA Times, but there was this English teacher who got hired at my high school. I had already been graduated several years out already, but this English teacher had been hired at my high school, and then there was like some weird behavior with this guy kind of being like too friendly and cozying up to the girls, of course. And then come to find that this guy... this teacher had worked at another like school, but it was a girls' school, and had a history of forming inappropriate like emotional relationships with his female students. Now, one of the issues with things like background checks is a background check is going to only pick up certain things.
Right.
Like if you have been arrested, sometimes depending on the type of background check, if there's an arrest record, or if you've actually been convicted of something. And the number of predators who are actually convicted is very, very, very tiny. So most predators are going to pass a background check.
Yes.
And a guy like that, with that type of behavior that doesn't necessarily cross into criminality, is not going to raise red flags through a background check.
I also had that conversation with a journalist friend of mine, too, because they were talking about Title IX and how... in some cases, Title IX just stays at the university level. And because it's closed and private, if there's not like a proceeding, right, then it's not public information to the students that this professor has like a Title IX allegation against them.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that way, no one is really safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they were telling me like, well, this is a problem because I have a Title IX accusation against this person, but... nobody else knows, and I can't really talk about it. And I don't know if they have other Title IX allegations against them. Mm-hmm. And so exactly what you're saying, like, unless there's like an arrest record, you're not going to know.
No. And so, you know, somebody like that can very easily slip through those cracks and get rehired and rehired and rehired at schools. So that's what happened here. But it was only because there was a word of mouth between former students at the old school, parents, faculty, the word got out.
Right.
And then that's when, I don't know, they tipped something off to a journalist. There was a write-up in the paper. It was a whole thing, right? But I see that. I think those situations are where you'll see an ethical chisme. You know, like, oh, this guy has never been arrested. He's never been charged. But just know that he has this pattern.
Right.
You know, there was another example right before the pandemic, actually. I was working at this all-girls school in Pasadena in January. Like, right after we got back from winter break, they had, like, an all-staff faculty meeting. And the head of the upper school was like, you guys, faculty, prepare lesson plans for remote learning because we have a parent who works at the Pasadena Department of Public Health who has received word that there is an oncoming pandemic and everything is going to get shut down. So you guys need to be prepared to, like, go home and teach from home with, like, maybe a week's notice. But they let us know in January. So okay. They had more than a week, right? Because then things shut down when? In March. So that day, I went home, and my mom is a teacher, but at, like, a predominantly Latino school in Montebello. I was like, Mom, these white people know something that none of us know, and they just told us, you know? And they're saying a pandemic is coming, and they're asking all the teachers to prepare lesson plans. Now, this is the type of school that is not going to do something like that unless it's actually happening, you know? And I went and I told my mom and she was like, oh, my God. And then my mom went and told her faculty, her other teachers, and they started making their lesson plan copies and they started preparing. And then, of course, like March, here comes the pandemic. We're shut in. So I took that as an example of me engaging in ethical chisme.
Yes, look at Mala.
For the greater good, for the children, for the children.
The children of Montebello.
For the children of Montebello, for their futures. So yeah, go me.
Go you. Go you, Mala. Stars, tens across the board.
Thank you. I do what I can. So yeah, I mean, do you have now new evolved thoughts or examples, experiences since 2017 involving ethical chisme?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think my big one is one that I'm not ready to talk about.
Okay, fair.
And so when I was in grad school, my thesis, I think, was a form of ethical chisme. And it's something that my thesis, I'm adapting into like a bigger project. And so which is why I don't want to talk about it just yet. But I think going back to what I said about family histories, like I think our family histories, obviously, we know they're personal. They can be a part of oral history, our own oral history, and how we pass down traditions and knowledge. But there's also this thing in the Latino, Latinx community where there's like lots of secrets.
Oh, yeah. We love a good secret.
We love a good secret. Secrets that are harmful, secrets that are like scandalous, salacious, harmful, what have you. And so I think that the project that I'm working on that will hopefully see the light of day sometime this year or next year is a form of ethical chisme.
Yeah.
And it's a form of, you know, really looking at my family as an example, as a case study, but looking at it within the context of a larger phenomenon in the Latino, Latinx community.
Yeah.
And so to be determined, I hate to be cryptic, I'm so sorry, but I think that there are, because there's a lot of secrets and you can think of whatever secret your family may have and think about, well, why don't they want anybody to know this?
Right.
And so I think in unleashing the secrets in an ethical way, right, not in a way that's going to harm anybody and like implicate someone, or maybe, I don't know, but I think that by setting the secrets free, we're also letting go of shame. And I think that that is a part of using ethical chisme.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I feel like the project that you are describing is perfectly encapsulates the concept.
Right.
You guys are going to love it. You guys are going to love it. I'm so sorry for you guys if you don't know what it is. I hope you're jealous of me because I know what it is.
Mala knows all my secrets.
Yes.
She does.
Yes, 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 yes.
And one day you will also know all of my secrets.
They're good.
Yeah.
They're good ones.
But yeah, I like going back to what you said. I like what you said of like expanding on like the knowledge share as ethical chiesmen and like resource sharing as ethical chiesmen. Because I think like pandemic of, I mean, having lived through the pandemic and the ongoing pandemic that's, I guess, now an endemic, of seeing like the mutual aids, of seeing people just really pool their resources together.
Yes.
Thinking about how businesses were like applying to different grants to like keep their business afloat, like all that resource sharing that's like really hard to also navigate because there's a lot of bureaucracy involved. And so when you have someone that's like willing to like walk you through that process, I'm thinking mainly during the pandemic, right? Of like the small little, like, nobody knows this, but we applied for a PPP loan.
Yes.
It was a very small loan. And the reason that we applied, I mean, we applied for it because we needed it because we were traveling a lot. But the reason that we were able to apply for it and get it was because my best friend, her mother is a realtor and used to work in banking. And so she knew how to like do all those documents. And so she did it for us.
Yeah.
You know, for a small fee. And we were able to like pay ourselves a little something, and that helped me pay the mortgage, you know?
Right.
And like, that's, I think, is another form of like resource sharing that we did during the pandemic.
Oh, 100%. It was so helpful. And, you know, I don't think that we were really considering that for ourselves.
No, we wouldn't have.
Until she brought it up to us.
Because at the time we were freelancers, independent contractors. We didn't have an LLC.
Right.
Like, we didn't really have the income to apply for a PPP loan the way like other businesses did. But we did have a little something. Mm-hmm. So we did get a little something.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got it forgiven because we had someone that was able to like save your receipts, submit them to me.
Yes.
I will submit them for you. Like all that bureaucracy that can really overwhelm me or mm-hmm. overwhelm you. So having someone help us with that, I think, was another way of like you're saying, that resource sharing.
Yeah. Even like the referrals we've gotten over the years for our attorney, for our accountant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, where would we have found our attorney?
Mm-hmm.
Like, not with a Google search.
Right.
You know, like we would not have been able to find him on our own.
No.
Somebody else had to share the information with us. They yes. had to decide like, OK, I'm going to give them this nugget.
Yes.
You know,
and it was
a gold nugget.
It was.
A gold nugget.
It was.
Sometimes they're dirt rocks, but sometimes they're gold. So that's something also to look out for, is like, not all chiesmet is ethical.
Yeah.
But some of it is.
But some of it is.
Some
yes.
of it is.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, I think that we continue to engage in ethical chiesmet through the podcast. And look up epistemologies. I think obviously the entire podcast is look up epistemologies. We mm-hmm. don't even have to call it that. That's literally just what Loca Thora Radio is. But yeah, I love to see like people talking about chisme and reframing it and like really thinking about the way like whenever anything is like relegated like feminine or to like that's cosas de mujeres, like there's obviously negative connotation to mm-hmm. it. So I love that people have like reclaimed chisme.
Yeah.
And they use it in their own way. There's a lot of projects called chisme now, which
yes.
is cool.
Yes, yes, yes.
But yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about ethical chisme back in 2017. So go us.
Go us. I wonder too with the it's not so recent anymore, but the viral Cat Williams interview on the Shannon Sharp podcast.
Right.
Cat Williams was dropping so many stories and like facts and so much information. There were some moments where I was like, okay, Cat, you were 11. You read 5,000 books in a year. Okay. There's little things where I'm like, all right, you know, but
You're embellishing.
But there was so much buzz around his interview and people sharing clips and other comedians coming in and saying, he's telling the truth. This is what happened. This is the backstory. He's dropping gems here, you know? And so I think sometimes somebody like a Cat Williams will come out with an explosive interview and some like insider knowledge, some behind the scenes stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I find that to also be like an example of this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't even talked about, just to wrap up the conversation, you know, with some macro examples, like, the whistleblowers of the LA Fed tapes, you know, when the most powerful Latinos in LA, LA City Council, were caught gerrymandering, being racist, being anti-Indigenous in one room.
Yeah.
And that was leaked, you know, back in 2022. So I think, like, that's an example of ethical chisme.
Yeah.
I think the person that leaked the Supreme Court Roe versus Wade draft was engaging in ethical chisme. They were a whistleblower. I think whistleblowing is ethical chisme.
Yeah. And I think back in the day at the time, we cited a couple people as engaging in ethical chisme. And I want to say one of them was her name Jennifer Fry, who was the mistress of Scott Peterson.
Yes.
Who, like, came forward and blew the whole case up and was like, it was him.
I think that was actually our episode of La Otra.
Oh, we were talking about how mistresses have engaged in ethical chisme.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Jennifer Fry was one of those examples. Yes. Monica Lewinsky, I think, also made that episode.
Mm-hmm,
also,
she did.
According to Wikipedia, her father is Bernard Lewinsky, an oncologist, who is the son of German Jews who escaped from Nazi Germany, first moving to El Salvador, finally to the United States when he was 14. So they had a stop in El Salvador.
Yes.
But I personally am going to hold Monica.
Stop it. I remember you actually saying Monica on the episode.
As a Latina icon.
I do not. So,
but she was in that episode.
She was.
And we talked about how she also was engaging in an ethical chisme about good old slick Willie Bill Clinton.
Lord.
That man. My mom loves Bill Clinton to this day.
The Latinos love Bill Clinton.
They love Bill Clinton.
They do.
They love Bill Clinton.
Especially the boomers, yes.
They love Bill Clinton.
Yes.
It's the saxophone. It's the saxophone. People love like a cool president, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway,
forget about the war crimes, you know.
I mean,
he's cool.
I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Anyway, well, this has been another episode of Locatora Radio. Thank you for tuning in to the entire season, to past seasons. Thank you for keeping up with us year after year. This has been an incredible season, and we hope you'll come back next season.
Until next time.
Besitos. Besitos.
Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, is executive produced and hosted by me, Mala Munoz, and Diosa Femme.
Story editing by me, Diosa.
Audio editing by Stephanie Franco.
Thank you to our locamores, our listeners, for all of your support.
Besitos! Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela.
Hosted by Mala Munoz
and Diosa Fem.
Hay dos cosas que son absolutamente ciertas. Abuelita te ama y nunca diría que no a McDonald's. Date un gusto con un Grandma McFlurry en tu orden hoy. Es lo que abuela quisiera. Barapapapa. En McDonald's participantes por tiempo limitado.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.